their whole objective. Money is the honey, as they say. So they are considered foolish because it's not useful for them or anyone. I'm not describing more because I have a particular thing I want to share, but you get the idea if you want to study the purports of 7, 15 and 16. And next he says, Naradhama. We sing in the morning, Adhama Janara Bandhu. Right? Adhama, Nara Adhama means Naradhama. Nara means human being, or as we say, man in general. Adhama means fallen. So Naradhama is that category of person who knows that coming to Krishna's lotus feet is the right thing to do, but either he cannot or he won't. So Naradhama in terms of knowledge is a little higher, but in terms of application is lower than Mudha, because the Mudha doesn't know. Right? If you look at let's say traffic laws, a person who's driving, let's say, above speed limit, because they don't know, versus someone who knows and yet they do, who's more culpable? Naturally, the person who knows, who knowingly does something. So they're called Naradhama. Knowingly cannot be with Krishna, cannot be at Krishna's lotus feet, cannot come. Then the third category is Mayaya Aprahrita Jnana. Aprahrita means stolen. And Mayaya means stolen by Maya. And what is stolen? Jnana. One's knowledge is stolen by Maya. So a person who has a materialistic view of the world, a mechanistic view of the world, one who has determined to conduct research to prove that God does not exist, that this whole world is being conducted simply on the basis of some material laws, and that behind these laws there isn't a supreme controller. In fact, they're convinced that there isn't one, and they're out to convince others as well. And the fourth one, he says, Asuram Bhavam. Asuram Bhavam means the mentality or nature of asuras. Asuras means they actually take on the mantle, the responsibility of disproving God, severely atheistic, and challenging the laws and challenging the order set up by Krishna. This is Asurim Bhava, Mayaya Prahrita Jnana. Mudha is just the foolish worker. He's just busy, but he doesn't know anything. For him, Mudha means he's busy working to maintain himself in this world, primarily guided by economic development. Gokulananda Prabhu, you wanted to say something? Sometimes the word Mudha is used in another connotation. Yes. Yes. So please. Mudha, especially in this, is those who are foolish. For example, or fruit of workers. King Prachina Barhishat was used as that example. He was very pious, but only involved in fruitive work. Or those who don't have time for even pious work. For them, they're guided by economic development. If there's money, there's life. Without money, I cannot survive. Without a comfortable life, I cannot survive. Forget about even comfortable life. I need to work hard just to make enough money to have a meal and make ends meet. They're just busy with that. And this is, in most people are attracted to it because it is rational thinking, which is true. If one doesn't work, one cannot get money, which is true. However, what is even a greater truth is that Krishna is maintaining everyone. And if one simply takes enough time to serve Krishna, then Krishna will maintain even against rationality. How a person is maintained is quite bewildering. The natural laws that everyone is governed by, those laws do not apply to a devotee. We have seen in our own lives, right? In many of our situations, I can give many examples that I'm aware of, and I'm sure you're aware of, and in the world, many are such that there. That a person who wants to serve Krishna, within their heart there is a firm conviction, I want to serve Krishna. For them, the natural laws sometimes don't apply. Which the natural law is, well, you need money, you have to go out, work hard, get some money, pay your bills. But somehow Krishna manifests things that happen very easily. And it happens in a way that without putting too much effort, their economic conditions are taken care of by Krishna. And there are many devotees in our Sangha like that, who otherwise don't have any ways of making money. But still Krishna has devised different ways by which it happens. I'm just thinking if I should give specific examples or not. I'll give Prabhupada time example, just not to embarrass a particular person. During Srila Prabhupada's time in Haight-Ashbury, when the devotees had started a little center, they had no money and they couldn't even pay their bills. It came to a point where the landlord had told the devotees, if you don't pay anymore, I will have to send you an eviction notice. And that was a place where the seekers would come, they would have nice kirtan, whatever, simple prasadam. It was a center in the hippie San Francisco capital, I guess. And the devotees had, they wondered, should we take up jobs? Should we earn money some other way? But they were all convinced by Srila Prabhupada that if you serve Krishna properly and sincerely, Krishna will give you the money. And so they took that to heart. In fact, they took it to so much heart that every day they would just chant and do Harinam and distribute prasadam, saying that Krishna will take care. Srila Prabhupada said, Krishna will take care, so Krishna will take care. It's described that one morning, Shamasundar Prabhu and Mother Malati, they were walking down the street, going towards the center. And out of nowhere, suddenly, there were $100 bills raining down. It was not one or two. There were many $100 bills just raining down. They thought someone was throwing. They looked up. There is not a person there. Just one after the other. $100 bills. So they collected that, paid off their rent, and no one came to claim. It was just money falling from the sky. It's far out. Another story is given by, narrated by Harivilas Prabhu, who was the temple president of the Paris temple. And this is 1970 sometime when Prabhupada was about to visit Paris. And Prabhupada was due to arrive at the temple at about, 10 o'clock in the morning. And Harivilas Prabhu is narrating that he's at Mangalarati, the kitchen cooler or wherever, the refrigerator where they're supposed to have bhoga is empty because they don't have any money to buy bhoga. They don't have any money to buy flowers. They don't have money for anything. And the spiritual master is arriving. And he wanted to have a nice grand reception. He wanted to make sure that the deities are nicely decorated with flowers. It's proper. And he's standing at Mangal Arati, just before Mangal Arati, chanting his rounds, praying to the deities. How am I going to serve Srila Prabhupada? How will I even receive him? There's absolutely nothing. How will we serve you? There is nothing. No money. Everything is empty. And how are we going to manage this? Please help. Do something. I don't know. And they say he's standing a little from the altar with his eyes closed, chanting japa. And in between, as he was chanting, he opened his eyes. And right on the altar was a brown paper bag. Said, oh, brown paper bag. Naturally, he wanted to see what's there early in the morning, because it's early, before Mangal Arati. So no, at least he was not conscious that someone came in or not. And he opened the brown paper bag, and there was a wad of francs. Hundreds of francs, all stacked up nicely. And so he, like, wow, took the brown paper bag, stood there, saying, maybe someone forgot. They may come back and claim their bag. I'll hold it with me. Whole throughout Mangal Arati, Japa period, it was in his hands. No one came back to claim it. Big fat wad of cash. So Krishna maintains. They bought bhoga, they bought flowers, received Prabhupada, and immediately everything, they went out shopping and received Prabhupada very, very nicely. And that money helped them for a period of time. Many examples, even in contemporary times. I'll embarrass Goloka Prabhu a little bit. Hopefully he wouldn't mind it. Goloka came, and then other examples are also there. I'm sharing this one. Goloka came as a student to the university here. I met him, and I think our friendship grew. And it was a time for him to graduate, but he was going to graduate in about 6 months. And usually 6 months prior, one is supposed to look for jobs. And given his academic record, and I guess he could have applied for jobs anywhere in the US, which for most students, that's a desperate measure, because you have to go from student visa to worker visa. If you know the headache, it's painful. And in fact, most students compromise. Any sort of job is okay. Very low-paying job is okay. Anything is okay as long as they can do their visa so they can continue. Because everyone has loans and they want to make it here. At that time, Goloka said, I don't want to leave Chicago. I want to be here. I want to be here, I want to do service, I don't want to go. And I will not look for or apply for any jobs outside of Chicago. So it's a risk, yeah, it's all right. If it happens, it happens. And true to that, he was one of the first among his entire class to find a job. 6 months before he graduated, he had a job. Of course, it was not the best among paying jobs, but for him, that was not the criterion. He said, it's okay, what? As long as my bills are paid, I'm cool. And Krishna kept, and you know, his company was, that first company he joined, the boss was this way, that way, every day there was new things, but they were so flexible with whatever he wanted to do. So for him, it didn't matter. And he just stayed put. And Krishna's just nicely taking care of him. And other examples too. She's sitting there, that's another example of Rasika Manjari's work life. Leela Manjari's situation, Padma Priya's situation, Ajita's situation, Paramakaruna is here. I mean, example after example, example after example, that when there is even a little bit of sincerity, Krishna manifests in different ways. How he takes care of the devotees. So the mudha is a person who doesn't understand that Krishna is actually taking care of me. In fact, Krishna is taking care of everyone without any exception. Krishna is taking care of everyone. And as devotees, each day we have to cultivate that conviction that Krishna is actually taking care of me. Although by my default conditioned thinking, I might think that I'm taking care of myself, or somehow the circumstances are taking care, or my karma is taking care of me, or I have to do something to figure out my life. This is not the principle by which we operate. Of course, we do practical things. It's not like we close our eyes, we turn down our intelligence. Like the other day, we were getting the example. We don't sit in a car, don't wear our seat belt, close our eyes and say, Krishna, you not only are you taking care of me, you're taking care of all other living entities, so may I drive without hitting anyone. That's silly. But in the grand context, Krishna is taking care of every one of us. Every living entity, actually. Eko bahunam yo vidadhati kaman. Then there are four other types who actually come to Krishna. So first one is artha. Artha means one who is in distress, physical or mental distress. And they come to Krishna because they either heard somewhere or they have some conviction that I should go to Krishna. But their motivation is not to serve Krishna. Their motivation is to become free of that particular distress, physical or emotional, mental, emotional, like that. The second is artharthi. Well, Krishna uses jigyasu, but Prabhupada translates artharthi first. Artha. Artha means wealth, economic development. Artha arthi. Arthi means one who's looking for that benefit. So one who's looking for financial help, one is looking for economic conditions to become better. I need a job, I need some money, I don't know what to do. Please give me a job. Bless this house, as Jayadvait Maharaj's poetry goes. They come to Krishna. The third is Jigyasu. Jigyasu is one who is inquisitive. What is all this about? Is there God at all? Is there an absolute truth? Why am I suffering? Is there life after death? Etc. etc. Why do I see there is so much suffering in the world? Why am I not happy in this world? Etc. These are questions of one where one is inquisitive. And such persons come to meet Krishna. And Jnani is a person who knows better that this world is temporary, there is no happiness in this world, and I want to search for the absolute truth. I want to search for the absolute happiness. So these four, among these four, the first three have a tendency that once their motivation has been met, they may go away from Krishna. Possible. Someone who has distress, once their distress is solved, they may not have the same enthusiasm or motivation to keep coming to Krishna. Or one whose economic situation has been taken care of, they may not come back again. Or if their inquisitiveness has been managed, okay, something, nice. Generally, the jigyasu may have more enthusiasm, that the jigyasu may become a jnani. But the jnani will continue to searching after the absolute truth. So Krishna describes these four, those who come to him, although they are mixed devotees, they're not pure devotees. Krishna says they're very, very broad-minded. Udara evaite sarvaha. They're very saintly, they're very pious persons. So someone might say, but that's not pure. No, it doesn't matter. They're very pious because this way or that way, they've at least come to me. So that's being described. Then, Prabhupada writes, but the advantage for such materialistic devotees is that they sometimes give up their material desires and become pure. And then he says, Admitting that they have forgotten pure devotional service because of extensive material opportunities, they fully surrender to the Lord, leaving to His consideration whether to maintain them or annihilate them. Before one comes to that stage, there is an intermediate stage, and that is where we are. We may not be able to necessarily express to Krishna, even if you annihilate me, that's okay. We do pray for Krishna, please maintain us. Please maintain my Krishna consciousness. Please maintain me in the shelter of the devotees. Please protect me from falling prey to the dark negative things in my heart, because there's a tendency that these things do come up in circumstances. I have a tendency to say or do things that are not very useful for myself or others, etc. So something that's practical for all of us, something to think about is, let's go back down memory lane and let's consider what brought us to or what brought us in contact with Krishna consciousness in the first place. Very likely that it may be in one of these four categories, one of those three maybe. Maybe there is a jnani, that's rare, but one of the three categories that may have brought us. Sometimes it's also possible that we may be in one of the above four categories, mudha, maya, naradama, maya prahita jnana, asurim bhava. Even then we may have come in contact with the devotees and some change may have happened. Okay, so whichever way we came in contact with Krishna consciousness, let's consider what those circumstances or motivations were by which we came in contact. And let's consider today, after spending some time, for some persons it's years, for some persons it's months, for some persons it's weeks, whatever. Let's reconsider what the motivations are in our heart today that impel us and motivate us to do devotional service. Hopefully, there is a change in those motivations. Hopefully, it's not the same fears and concerns and anxieties and insecurities that existed when we met the devotees. Hopefully not. And whatever our motivations today, we need to re-examine and adjust according to Prabhupada's teachings. So sometimes we do face circumstances in life that may make us again insecure or fearful or anxious or uncertain. Either it is some mental or physical distress, some economic considerations, whatever. Or again, we may fall into this mudha category of, oh really, should I actually take care of my life in a different way? Or whatever. Then we should reconsider those motivations and adjust them. Adjust them according to pure devotional principles. And let those be the motivators to continue in our Krishna consciousness, to go forward. Because anything that has been existing prior, if it is still there, then we can be assured of one thing, that our execution of devotional service will be very unsteady. It will be very challenging. But when we readjust the motivation, you know that, my dear Krishna, yes, my heart is filled with all these insecurities and fears and concerns, but I've heard from Srila Prabhupada and his followers that this is not why I should come to you. I should come to you purely for seeking opportunities of service. I should come to you for purification of my heart, so that I will know factually that I'm your servant. Today I've just been told by someone that I'm your servant and I'm operating on that. Let that become my full realization. Let that become my nature, such that all my activities are based on service to you. Service attitude towards you. All situations, not just the direct service that I'm offering you, but everything. And that readjustment is important. Then, Prabhupada says, we can come to this fully surrendered state. This fully surrendered state, Prabhupada's writing is, whether you keep me, maintain me, or annihilate me. Marabi, rakhabi, jo ichha tumhara. However you like to deal with me, that is okay for me. That's tough. We do still carry in our young stage of Krishna consciousness, in the sadhana stage, we do still, although we know better, we do still carry the conceptions of Krishna, please take care of me. Which is nice, which is how which is proper. But when the full realization or the realization starts to awaken, that my dear Krishna, whether in the material world I have a particular material asset or not, it's irrelevant to me anymore. Whether I have a job or don't have a job, whether I have money or I don't have money, whether I have so-called sense of security or not, I just want to be with you. Or I just would like that you keep me in the shelter of your lotus feet. That is more important for me. That is the beginning of this feeling surrendered, the sense of surrender, which is important to cultivate because that is the path of Krishna consciousness. And here we hear about achieving the Lord's lotus feet. So somewhere else, it's described by our acharyas that achieving the lotus feet of the Lord means sadhana bhakti. Because bhakti begins at the lotus feet and is cultivated from there on. So to achieve the Lord's lotus feet means to engage in sadhana bhakti. And sadhana bhakti has, you know, proper methods. Rupa Goswami has put down the method by which we learn to become devotees of Krishna. There are methods. It's not just today I come and I say, it's not free of method. It's not some mental, one day I like it, one day I don't like it, some sentimental, loosey-goosey stuff. There's a method. And to follow that method is important, because that's what our acharyas have taught us. And if we notice, I'm sure we have, Srila Prabhupada put us through, and is putting us through, a very regulated regimen of how to develop our Krishna consciousness in a proper systematic method. Systematic is the key word here. Bhakti doesn't grow or manifest in an unsystematic manner. Never has done. Always systematic. Because there's a method. Krishna is all about being systematic and methodological. If you observe the Bhagavad Gita, it is not random. It is very methodological. Krishna just doesn't jump from, he doesn't begin with, hey Arjuna, sarvadharman parityajya. Although that's the message even in the beginning. But there is a proper method through which Krishna takes Arjuna and all of us through how to come to sarvadharman parityajya, mam ekam sharanam vraja. He gives us a proper method, he analyzes it for us. Here are some landmarks, here's the path, here are some possible obstructions, here's what great persons have done, this is how they have achieved success, etc., etc. And he talks about a whole organized manner by which to move forward in one's Krishna consciousness. You pick up Nectar of Devotion. Is it disorganized? No. From chapter 1, very methodic, how to go. Starting with the characteristics of pure devotional service, the six, what happens stage 1, what happens stage 2, etc. With a lot of scriptural support, how bhakti develops. Very important. So sadhana bhakti is essential to feel or to develop systematically the sense of Krishna, you are my only maintainer. And you are my only shelter. And however you take care of me is fine for me. It's a bazillion times better than when I step outside and I think that I'm taking care of myself. Outside, step outside doesn't necessarily mean physically. It could be physically also, but even relationally. If I step outside of my relationship with Krishna and I try to control things, then I will not satisfy myself. As well as even if I'm within the relationship with Krishna and Krishna is being a little difficult with me. You see the picture? It's important. So here the demigods have started offering this prayer and now they're exactly saying what is it that's bothering them. They're mixed devotees. There's a distress. What is the distress? Vritrasura. This big mighty demon who is devouring everything. So they first say, Atho, therefore, Isha, O Supreme Controller. Because Krishna is a controller. As long as we think we are the controllers, we have some exciting realizations waiting, right? We're not the controllers of anything. The trick of Maya is that we are given some things as if we are controlling them. We do control a few things. But in a real sense, we're not controlling anything. We can't control our mind, we can't control our senses. It seems like we can control a few people around us, but that also with time fades away. We cannot control what is happening inside our body, right? There's a saying one devotee said, if you really think you're the controller, can you decide that from today, for all of today, forget about from today, all of today, I will not go to the bathroom at all. Is it possible? You can try. You can tighten up your bladder if you like for a while, but after some time, you have to go. You can't control anything. So Isha, Krishna is the only controller. So he's saying, Jahi Tvastram. Jahi means to kill. Krishna uses this word kill in Bhagavad Gita. Do you know where? In the section dealing with lust. Chapter 3. Jahi Shatrum Mahabaho. Please kill this demon. Please kill this formidable enemy. Jahi Shatrum Mahabaho. That is called lust. So here they are asking for Jahi. Please kill Vritrasura. Tvastram. The son of Tvasta. Why? Grasantam Bhuvanatrayam. Grasanta is to devour. This fellow is eating up everything within the three worlds. Our weapons as well. Grastani yena naha. Naha means our. Astrani. Astra ayudha. Astra means weapons or arrows. And ayudha means all sorts of weapons. We've been throwing all kinds of weapons at him. And he's just been eating them up. Finishing them, devouring them. He is more powerful than we are. And we are not able to fight him. So could you please kill him for us? This is materialistic desire. Right? It will come soon where Vritrasura will also offer prayers to Krishna. And we'll see how his prayers are very different. His prayers will be, my dear Krishna, whether you kill me or you don't, it doesn't matter. Or when Parikshit Maharaj was cursed by the little Brahmana boy, may you die in 7 days, you arrogant king. And what was Parikshit Maharaj's response? O sages, I beg you that when death comes, if I ever have another life, then let me be a devotee of Krishna and let me always be in the association of his devotees. This is my only desire, whether death comes or not, whenever it comes. Let this snake bird come and bite me and kill me. That's cool, no problem. when Chitraketu, this is Chitraketu, when Chitraketu was cursed by Parvati Devi, his response was, all right, so be it, no problem. And that same Chitraketu is now in the demon's body, called Vritrasura. He's a great devotee, so great that he became a very close associate of Lord Shankarshan. And now he's in this body of a demon, Vritrasura. Although the body is so-called demon, his consciousness is as a devotee. And later in one of the purports, Prabhupada writes, when Indra and Vritrasura are fighting, and Indra is afraid of his life, Prabhupada writes that Indra is the actual demon and Vritrasura is the devotee. Demon because he's thinking about himself and his security. It's demonic in that sense. It's in the mode of ignorance. In the mode of ignorance, a person does something that is harmful for themselves, or not beneficial at least. In mode of passion, one is only thinking about oneself. In mode of goodness, one is thinking about others as well. And in transcendence, one is thinking about Krishna, Krishna's benefit. So we are to come from that position, very low mode of ignorance position, where we didn't even know what was good for ourselves, by the mercy of the devotees and Prabhupada's books and teachings, somehow slowly things are becoming a little better. And we are being empowered to go beyond those modes of nature to start thinking about what is Krishna's benefit. How can Krishna be the enjoyer of whatever I'm doing, whatever I'm saying and thinking, etc. So that our true natures as the servants of Krishna will manifest. Recently we've been studying Nectar of Devotion, in which we're told that there are two types of servants. One servant is who does everything that he's been asked to do. And another servant is called Kinkara. Kinkara means, what may I do for you? Always ready. What can I do for you, Krishna? How would you like to engage me today? We're trying to develop that consciousness. We're trying to develop that kind of being of who we are. Then we can appreciate life in its fullness. Right now, I can't speak for everyone else, but right now, in the stage of sadhana bhakti, appreciating life in its fullness may not be fully possible. We have some ideas of it, some semblance of it. But we want to appreciate life fully, in whatever circumstance we are put in, whatever may happen. And we want to appreciate life. Life in service to Krishna, of course. Otherwise there's no life, right? Life means that there is service to Krishna. So Prabhupada's educating us on pure devotional consciousness. That even the demigods, unfortunately in this case, they're motivated by something other than pure devotional service. It's devotional, no doubt. It's mixed. It has some impurities. Like gold, the purest form is called 24 karat gold. In America, most jewelry is 14 karat. Not much value. In India, if you gift someone jewelry with 14 karat, they'll say, sure, no value for it. It has to be minimally 22 karats. It's closer to purity. So this is like 14 karat or 18 karat gold. It's gold, but there are other things mixed in it. Alloys. Remember alloy? Alloy is a term from chemistry that you mix few metals together to strengthen a particular metal. That's called alloy. And Prabhupada uses the phrase unalloyed devotional service. Unalloyed devotional service. It's not mixed with anything else. No other motivation except wanting to serve Krishna. Unalloyed devotional service. Okay, any questions, comments? You want to add something if I missed something? Acharya Nistaprabhu.
Thank you, Prabhu. Some of the purports we were reading recently before this text indicate that because Krishna is omniscient and omnipresent, there's no need to disturb him by sharing our conveniences and our inconveniences. One should not
Correct.
disturb the Lord. So, for a devotee, if he's going through some things, he doesn't make that appeal, he doesn't pray at all for that, or he's simply content doing his service, or is he, can he feelingly pray, but knowing that it's to increase his service, and so therefore, if the Lord so desires,
Yes.
which of those is best?
Which one is best?
Yeah.
Well, what is better is that we practice Krishna consciousness honestly. Honesty is, we hear in the purport that a devotee doesn't express any conveniences or inconveniences because it might disturb the Lord. If that's our realization as well, then great. If that is not our realization, then we can come in front of Krishna and say, "I'm very sorry. As a, I, I'm, I, one day I would like to not come and ask you or express to you what's bothering me. I would like to come to that stage one day, by your mercy and by the mercy of Guru and the devotees. But right now, this is bothering me. So please, this is how we can say, this is bothering me. So please help me in such a way that I go beyond this." Because I hear from our founder Acharya that I should not be stuck in these things. But unfortunately, I am. So please help me go beyond this. Let me be open to how you want to reciprocate with me such that I can go beyond this. So please help me that way. Otherwise, what happens is inside something else is bothering us. We can come in front of Krishna and do the "I don't want to ask you anything," but it's inside, it's still brewing, and Paramatma is anyway listening, like, "What are you doing?" So, in that sense, honest. Yeah, I'm sorry, this is where I am. Please help me go beyond. Like that. Yes, we'd like to go there. Where we can stand in front of Krishna and say, "Maro bhi, rakho bhi, jo ichcha tohara." If Krishna tests that a little bit, we're like, hold on a second, what are you doing? Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur would give the example of a parrot chanting Hare Krishna. He said, "You can teach a parrot to repeat Hare Krishna, and he'll very nicely say, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, like that. But as soon as a cat shows up, the first thing the parrot will go like, ah!" So the Hare Krishna is only superficial. So we want to go beyond superficiality to the depth of Krishna consciousness. I'm honest. This is where I am. Please help me go beyond this. And I'm open to how you want to take me there. Is that okay? Anything else? You have something? Okay, thank you. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai.